Welcome to the Community Church Podcast. This is the second week of our series on Genesis 1 through 3 titled, In the Beginning. This message comes from Genesis chapter 1 and 1 Peter 3:15. Explore the harmonious relationship between faith and reason. Discover how biblical teachings align with scientific understanding and why embracing both can enrich your spiritual journey. And dive into the questions of origin, the truths revealed through nature, and the role of faith in everyday logic. If you'd like to take notes, there's a link for that in the show notes. Thanks for joining us. And without further ado, here's Pastor Mike.
This morning, I'm going to look at Genesis 1, and I invite you to have your Bibles open there. But then we're going to also look at a couple other passages. And one I just want to start reading from the very beginning is from 1 Peter chapter 3. So let me start by reading 1 Peter 3:15. It says, "But in your hearts honor Christ as the Lord is holy, always being prepared to make a defense to anyone who asks you for the reason for the hope that is in you, yet do it with gentleness and respect." That God calls us to be able to have a reason, to give it a sense of defense of saying, here's why I believe, and here's the reasons. Here's the reason behind it, the logic, the evidence. We're going to dig into this morning, but let me begin with a word of prayer. Father, thank you for the privilege that we do have to come together this morning, Father, again, to be able to dive into your word, to look at not only your word, but Father, how you even reveal yourself through creation, through science, through the world. Father, I pray that you would now speak through me, get me out of the way. Father, help me to communicate your truth, not only from the Bible, but Father, how we even seek to apply that into the world and some of the vital questions that are being asked in our culture today. Father, I pray your blessing in Jesus' name. Amen. Well, we ask a question, where do we come from? Where does our world come from? It's a huge question that we've got to be able to deal with. There are many that insist that, you know, science teaches that we ourselves, in fact, our whole world, all are the product of chance. It's the product of evolution and natural selection. Life itself spontaneously appeared from a dead planet and through some incredible event, you know, it not only began, but then you had this single self organism that over time evolved into all the world that we see around us. And that's very different from what the Bible teaches. The Bible teaches, it's kind of summed up in Genesis 1:1, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And the rest of Genesis 1 tells us how he did it and how he spoke it into existence, pretty much as it is. In Genesis 2, we see how he created mankind. Now, we might ask, does that mean that the Bible's teaching one thing and that science is teaching the exact opposite? Are the Bible and science in conflict? No, there's some that believe that. In fact, you know, I found this little cartoon that kind of says what some people think is the case. And, it's this little cartoon. It kind of illustrates this idea of, you know, it says on the one hand, you know, you'll have people that will come and say, the Bible teaches this, and you know, here's the conclusion, and you know, and we kind of need to make it all fit. And science is logic and reason, and so we're going to come to the evidence of science. And what we're going to see today is that's what people present. But not only today, but in these coming weeks, I want you to see that the Bible's not anti-science at all, and science and the Bible aren't in conflict. Actually, very much in alignment. In fact, I'm going to show you that in the coming weeks, that it's very much science that starts oftentimes. Scientists will start, here's the conclusion. And I'm going to hold to this conclusion in spite of the evidence. In fact, I'll even share in coming weeks quotes from scientists that acknowledge that. But what we want to do is to start by looking at the fact that in the Bible, in the story of creation, in the story of evolution, we have two, I'm going to call them incompatible stories of our origin. And I'll acknowledge that I'm going to do an overview, and there are different variations of each of these stories, and I don't want to get into that this morning, but just kind of this overview of this big picture, these two main stories. First of all, we could say we have Darwinism, Darwinistic evolution, and it has certain claims. The teaching of Darwinistic evolution can be summed up with the statement that life has evolved through random natural selection through long periods of time. Now let's break that up into several statements. What does it say? First of all, life has evolved. Basically, they acknowledge, okay, first of all, there was nothing. And out of that nothing, there was this giant explosion, so that out of that nothing, suddenly everything was spontaneously created. that's often referred to as the idea of the Big Bang Theory, that there was nothing and somehow out of that, everything. Now, let me ask you, is that a scientific statement? Does that agree with the evidence of science? If science is observation, how many times have you seen nothing create something? But that's what they believe. Okay, not only that, but they say nothing created everything, but then all we had is matter, and we had this big lifeless planet. And then somehow on that spontaneous planet where there was no life, spontaneously life happened. And they will argue that it was, it was simple life. It was a single cell organism, and that was simple. And that's what Darwin started to teach back a couple 150 years ago when they didn't understand the single cell. And one of the things we're going to see is the single cell is actually incredibly complex. It's not something that could have just spontaneously happened. And we're going to see that. And the Bible teaches that, again, actually the opposite. Science teaches that what they're claiming goes against the evidence. But even in that, they're going to say, okay, no, life came from nowhere. And then from that life, life evolved through random natural selection. So you have these simple single-cell organisms that over time had mutations. And over those mutations, it helped the cell better adapt to the environment. And some of those mutations were passed on to the next generation. So over time, it built up and evolved into be the life that we see now. Now, even in this, I'm just going to touch on this. This whole study of genetics is relatively new in DNA. But we've done a lot of study about mutations within the DNA level. And in all this study, this is kind of a deep study here, okay, but do you know what percentage of adaptations at the DNA level? There's a lot of them. Do you know which percentage have proved to be beneficial? Okay, let me give you this number. You could write this number down. It's 0.0%. Okay, so science tells us that in our observation, adaptation's always down. It's always bad. But yet, evolution is going to say, well, no, we started with science. And somehow we evolved. And even though it goes against everything that we've ever seen, we believe it actually evolved better. And it evolved all the life that we've seen that. So they believe that somehow through random natural selection, again, goes against reason. But then that through long, long periods of time, we developed the life that we have. Through long periods of time, through trial and error, the good adaptations kind of got passed on, the bad ones got pushed off, and so we have this amazing complexity of life that we have, all started from a single cell. And here what you have is you have time as the worker of magic. And so you have all these things that even evolutionists will say, well, that's impossible. And, well, but if we have enough time, if we have enough million years, suddenly the impossible becomes possible. And that's their argument. That's basically the overview of Darwinistic evolution. Now, that's one story. The other story is what the Bible teaches. And the Bible teaches us, the story of creation, that in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The foundational idea is not only the Bible, but of all these things. And where does it start? It says that, first of all, that God is the creator and designer of everything that exists. In the beginning, there was nothing except God. It's a self-existent, eternal God. And then God spoke, and by his ability, he created time and space and everything that exists. And this is not only a statement of religion, it's a statement of science and of philosophy, that God has spoken everything into existence. Now, I'm not going to read the whole account of Genesis 1 and 2 where he does that, but let me even just take a few things and point out a few things that were told about this story. So not only did God speak everything into existence, but he then does it by creating life forms to reproduce after their own kind. So let me take, for example, verse 11 in Genesis 1. And God said, let the earth sprout vegetation, plants yielding seed, and fruit trees bearing fruit, which is their seed, each according to his kind on the earth. And it was so. Verse 21, and God created sea creatures and every living creature that moves and with the water swim according to their kinds and every winged bird according to their kind. And God saw it was good. Verse 25, and God made the beasts of the earth according to their kinds and the livestock according to their kinds and everything that creeps on the ground according to its kind. And God saw it was good. So it's taught in the Bible, this idea that God purposely created, life forms. He created types of different animals. And each one, and plants, to reproduce in a way after their own kind. So according to the Bible, fruit trees produce fruit trees, and flowers produce flowers, and fish produce fish, and birds produce birds, and people produce people. That's the way that God designed it. Now again, is that consistent with lived experience. Yeah, it is. That's what exactly we see going on. We see things producing after their own kind. We don't see things producing something different than themselves. So God tells us that that's what he did. And not only that, but he said he did specifically then a creation of mankind. Man is created unique, and it's like unlike all other created beings. And so if we look in the biblical account, we read that after he created everything else, he kind of slows down and gives us this statement about the creation of man. Genesis 1:26. And then God said, "Let us make man in our image after our likeness. And let them have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds in the heavens and the livestock over all the earth and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth." And God created man in his image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. And we're told that man is unique. He alone is created in God's image. We're not like all the other animals. We're not just the random product of evolution that is that's pretty much just a little more evolved. There's something unique and different about us. And I know that we're so unique, then he comes back in Genesis 2 and he kind of expands the creation of mankind. And look what it says in Genesis 2:7. "And then the Lord God formed man from the dust of the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living creature." So man, unique to all creation, is given a soul. We're not only created in the image of God, that we have a soul. We have a life that exists beyond our earthly body, something that is eternal. And lastly, we see that God created all the world with a purpose according to his plan and his design. So if you read throughout the whole Genesis account, you read after every work of creation, God said, "It is good." And then we read it, verse 31, "And God saw everything that he made, and behold, it was very good. And there was evening and morning in the sixth day." And when you read this whole story, it tells us something. He's creating, and then he's stepping back, and he's saying, "It's good. That's the way I want it to be. That's just what I wanted to do. It's designed. It fits my purpose." And he's the source. He's the designer of everything that exists. You might be saying, "Well, okay, this is a science class. This has to do with the Bible. I know Genesis. Is it really that important?" But actually is important. This question about our origin, see, it's just not an isolated thing. It's a question of foundational and supreme importance that literally what we believe here impacts every aspect of life. See, it's not just about how the universe began. It's a question of everything in life. Are we the product of design and purpose or of chance and evolution? It's not just about our physical world. It's a question of things that will shape everything, how we view morality, how we view family, how we view the idea of gender and questions about gender in our culture, how we understand our work, how do we understand even truth itself? Why? Because if we are the product of evolution, then in all these areas, there is no design. There's no absolute right and wrong. And we should expect truth to be evolving, that we're learning more and that we're different from what we had in the past. And that's a good thing because that's what we do is we evolve. But on the other hand, if we were created, if we were the product of God's design, that's not only us, but morality and family. And with all these things, then our height of our health isn't evolving to a new level. It's actually understanding our original design and living according to that. In fact, if you even go back to Genesis chapter 3, what you have in Genesis 1 and 2, God creates, and he said, "It is good." And Satan then comes and says, "Well, it's actually not that good. You could improve on it if you just don't listen to God's rules." And so Adam and Eve tried to evolve beyond God, and the result was the fall and mess into the world. See, from a biblical worldview, we don't evolve. The pinnacle of morality isn't something that we evolve to. It's understanding what we were created for, what's revealed by God. It's not moving to a higher state, but understanding and aligning ourselves with the way that we were designed. And that's on a host of issues that we're going to be looking at and seeing expanded on in Genesis, these early chapters of Genesis in the next weeks. Now, I will admit that as I'm talking about it, there is a lot of confusion on this issue, a lot of controversy on this issue, and not only in the culture, but even among some within the church. People, this is again, creation and evolution and how do we understand? And here's where I want to slow down, and this might get a little heavier, but I think part of the problem is that there's some deception about language. In the series, we're going to be looking at Genesis 1 through 11. In Genesis 11, it's the story of what's called the Tower of Babel. And there, because of man's hubris, basically God curses mankind. He confuses the language so people couldn't understand each other. And I thought about that because I think that in this past century, on this issue specifically, Satan has taken the curse of Babel and said, hey, that's a good idea. Let me use it as a tool. And so he, as a strategy, tries to confuse language to cause confusion about this issue. Now, let's look at this. This might sound a little more academic, but when you look at this, I want you to see all these ideas are things that we interact with. Okay, so what is one of the terms that we confuse? The first one is the idea of truth. You know, from time to time, you may have heard about this, that, you know, from time to time, somebody will come and argue at a school board, and they'll say, you know, we should teach creation science along with evolution. And what has been, over the last 40, 50 years, pretty much the standard response, and so people will say, no, if you teach creation, that's religion, and no, we're committed to science. So that's bringing religion into the schools. And what that's doing is that's showing it's showing a belief system, this idea that there are two different types of truth, two different tiers of truth. And again, this is a little bit more philosophical idea, but it's something that's almost universally accepted by non-believers in our culture, and many Christians have kind of bought into it without realizing it. And the idea is that when we talk about truth, you know, there's two different kinds of truth, and each one has a different set of rules. So first of all, you'd say, well, there's religious truth. And when you talk about religious truth, well, truth there is a matter of faith. It's not something that you know in your mind, it's something that you know in your heart. And that's contrasted with the second sphere. Well, that's scientific truth. Well, that's something that you know with your mind. That's based on fact. So if we go to the religious sphere, what they're going to say, well, okay, here you have truth and it's accepted on faith. And a lot of times that's even, they'll say a blind faith, meaning that, you know, that there might be things that you know really aren't true, but because because the Bible says it, well, therefore it's a spiritual truth. We will accept it as, you know, so someone will even say, well, I know that we're a product of evolution, but the Bible says we're created, so I believe both. And people hold to that idea. And also, it's the idea that truth is relative. And so because it's a matter of faith, the heart, well, let's take, and we've all heard this, somebody will say, well, you believe in Jesus, well, I believe in this. I believe in Muhammad, and I believe in Buddha. And well, your faith is true for you, and my faith is true for me. My faith makes it true. So the idea that there is not absolute truth for everyone, your own truth is your own truth. Now, that's opposed to the other side, scientific, you know, which, again, based on fact. And here we're dealing with true truths, things that are knowable and that are provable, or so at least they claim that. And so they talk about facts like science. And so here they're going to say the facts that we discover in the scientific realm, well, that's absolute. It's not your faith that makes them true. It's the accuracy. So, for example, the law of gravity, whether you believe it or not, it's true. And so it's true for everyone. So how does this play out in this whole story? Here's where, again, I hear people say, and I've heard people say a lot, you know, I accept creation as a religious truth, but I accept evolution as a scientific truth, or scientific truth. My faith tells me that God created the world, but science tells me the world evolved over a long period of time. Now, I've heard numerous people say things like that. And some of you may have heard that. Some of you may have said that. In fact, if you're here today and that's the idea that you embrace, if it's what you've been taught there's a contradiction between faith and science. I mean, I say this with love and grace. If that's your view, I don't want to offend you, but that's total nonsense. I mean, it's deception. I mean, you've been duped if that's what you've been told to believe. Why? Because there is no such thing as two different types of truth. There's one kind of truth. It's either true or it's false, and that's true in all areas of life. And so, you know, if the Bible says that God created the world, it's making a claim that's not only a religious claim, it's saying in history, this is what happened. In science, this is what happened. It's a fact. All truth is absolute. It's always true for all people. And our belief about it doesn't change it. I mean, the fact is that either the world is a result of creation, and that's a fact, and it's true regardless of what I believe or you believe, or it's the result of evolution. One of us is right, one of us is wrong. And we've got to look at not just a, well, here's a religious perspective. You know, we've got to look at it and say, okay, what is the evidence behind that? Either God exists or he doesn't exist, and what you believe about that doesn't believe, you know, it doesn't matter. Now, here's why I think this is important. Because in this discussion, what I've seen is too often people who believe in evolution use this as an excuse to avoid the debate. So someone will come and say, let's talk about the science behind creation. Well, that's a religious statement. Well, so therefore, if it's a religious statement, it's not science. So in science, we assume that God doesn't exist. So therefore, all the evidence points towards evolution. And it's an excuse. It's a cheap excuse that too often we fall into. There's one area of truth. And any statement of truth that we're making is always dealing with everything. Well, now, the second idea that kind of goes along that, and that's not only the meaning of truth, but what's the meaning of science? Now, let me give you, I think, a good definition of science. Science is a sustained and systematic inquiry into nature. It tries to understand nature through observation, experiment, and theory construction. It is evidence and reason-based. That's what I think science should be. But when it comes to this debate, there are many who confuse science with what could be called scientism, materialism, naturalism. And it's basically the belief, the presumption, that the natural world is all that exists. It is all there, what we see in nature, what we can manipulate, that's all that there is. And it excludes the possibility of anything outside of nature. It excludes the possibility of supernatural. And so the only way to know anything is through scientific method. It's only what we can manipulate. That's the only truth we can know. Now, let me ask you something. Just think about that. Is that a scientific statement? The claim that only the scientific world, material world, exists, is that a valid scientific statement? No. You know why? Because they're saying the only thing we can know is something that's proven through science. Well, how do you prove that through science? It's self-defeating. It's basically saying we're going to take something we cannot prove, that we cannot know, that we cannot test, and we're going to assume that to prove that nobody else can make a statement that you cannot test. I mean, it's a totally self-defeating statement. The fact is that you can't make that assumption, but they do. And they say, well, and not only that, but that's science. And if you want to do science, then all you can do is facts. We exclude the possibility of the supernatural. You know, as followers of Christ, I want to let you know, I do believe in the supernatural. I do not believe in naturalism. I believe in science, but not scientism. I believe in the natural world, but I also believe that there is a God who exists outside of the natural world, a God that is above nature. And while he is consistent with science and nature, he is also outside of that. And I'll tell you, throughout the next couple weeks, I'm going to say, okay, here's two different views. Which one agrees more with the evidence? But I think starting with the assumption that science means scientism or naturalism, that's being dishonest. It's being deceptive. And we can't let them use that language. The third term, I think there's a lot of confusion on it, is the term evolution. And you might be thinking, wait a second, I didn't know that term. I mean, we're talking about that. That's Darwinism, and all life evolved from simple to complex. And however, even the concept of evolution isn't that simple, because there are actually two different, very distinct types of evolution, and confusion on this point leads to all kinds of confusion on the discussion. The first is what I'm going to call microevolution, or adaptation. And this is the ability, I believe God has created, but it's the ability for one species to adapt. And so a lot of times you'll even hear evidence and say, well, finches grew larger beaks, or that we see certain animals that, basically you look at this and you say, here we have dogs, and we have all these different dogs of different sizes and this and that. And well, adaptation, microevolution, is the ability for a dog to adapt within that species, but it doesn't change species. The other kind is called macroevolution, or that's Darwinism. And that's the idea that evolution allows major adaptations between species. So it basically allows the dog to become an elephant or something like that. And so when you think of Darwin and his theory, that's what's being described. Now, here's what you've got to realize. Let me even kind of put this chart here. I don't know if you can see this. But here's like a lizard, and you have different kinds of lizards, different size of lizards. Microevolution is the ability for the lizard to adapt. We believe that. There's a lot of evidence for that. Macroevolution is the ability for a lizard to grow wings and to become a bird. Okay, now, Darwinism says, okay, well, there's evidence of there, and therefore, this is true as well. And even when Darwin started to argue this, he acknowledged at that time there wasn't any evidence of evolution between species. And he just said, well, if we have enough time, we have more science, we'll discover it. They haven't found any. And when you look at this, what you've got to realize, there's a great deal of evidence for microevolution. There's all kinds of evidence that, you know, dogs change shapes and things like that. That's good science. There's no evidence for this macroevolution, for changing between species. But here's the bait and switch. They'll come and they'll say, well, here's the evidence of evolution, and they'll point to the microevolution, and then they'll say, well, therefore, this is true. And they'll change ideas, give you evidence for one, and then if you say, I don't believe in evolution, well, how can you deny this? Well, I believe in adaptation. I don't believe in evolution. And there's a big difference here. Now, when we look at this, I'm going to give you one more term, and this is a big one. How do we understand all of this in the concept of faith? What is it faith that God is calling us to believe about this, about creation? And specifically, faith, how does that work within reason, with logic, with science? What is the relationship? Now, again, we've seen that some people will argue, well, there's two types of faith, truth, and it's common, you know, have faith. Well, that's a spiritual truth, and going against logic and reason. That's a wrong view of faith. And there's a lot of Christians that I've even heard talk about this idea, it's a wrong view of a biblical faith. This idea that, well, faith is just believing something, even if it goes against logic, it's a leap into the dark, and it's something, well, here's what God says, and God says it, and I believe it, even though there's no evidence, even though it goes against evidence. Now, here's what we need to realize. The Bible doesn't call us to have a faith that's a leap into the dark. It doesn't ever call us to have a faith that goes against the evidence of what we can see in science. Actually, when you look in the Bible, it is consistently calling us to have a faith that while it goes beyond what we can know, it is consistent with what we know. It is consistent with science. It's actually calling us to a reasonable faith, a faith that is consistent with logic and reason. In fact, we read in the beginning a passage in 1 Peter chapter 3. And what does it say? In your hearts, honor Christ, the Lord is holy, always being prepared to make an offense to anyone who asks you for reason of hope that is in you. Be ready to give a reason. Understand the reason, the logic, the truthfulness behind your belief. And we're called to appeal to the facts beyond our faith. And you know what? You see it throughout the Bible. So, for example, in the Gospels, they have the story of Jesus. Does it say, well, here's the spiritual stories of Jesus, and just believe them because we say? No. Look at the Gospels. They're constantly appealing to eyewitness testimony. Luke, who wasn't one of the 12 disciples, starts his Gospel by saying, I've done the research, I've done all this, here are the eyewitness, you know, here's a logical account, historical account of the life of Jesus. Or you think about Paul in 1 Corinthians 15. He makes the argument that the resurrection of Jesus is foundational to the faith of the Christian life. But then he doesn't just say, well, this is a spiritual claim. What does he do? He points to evidence. He says it's a historical statement, and he points to historical evidence. For I have delivered to you as first importance what I also received, that Christ died for our sins according with the scriptures, that he was buried and raised on the third day according with the scriptures. But he doesn't stop there. He doesn't stop and just say, you know, these are spiritual truths. He said, no. And then he appeared to Cephas, and then to the 12. And then he appeared to more than 500 brothers at one time, most of whom are still alive, although some have fallen asleep. And then he appeared to James and all the apostles. And last of all, as one untimely born, he appeared to me. And he's basically saying he appeared to all these people. And if you want to go talk to them, go talk to them. There's evidence behind this. He's calling us to a faith that is consistent with reason. And when it comes to issues of science and what we're going to be looking at, what we find is that the Bible does the same thing. He calls us to look in nature because nature gives evidence of God. So, for example, Psalm 19, the heavens declare the glory of God and the skies above proclaim his handiwork. Day to day pours out speech and night to night reveals knowledge. It's actually creation is speaking, it says, that it's revealing God. Romans 1 tells us that creation is so clear about God that no one has an excuse for denying God's existence, for what can be known about God is plain to them, because God has shown it to them. For his invisible attributes, namely his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly perceived ever since the creation of the world and the things that have been made, so they are without excuse. They're clearly seen. You know, throughout the years, the scholars and Bible, theologians have taken these verses and teach that the Bible God reveals himself through nature. In fact, it's referred to theologically as general revelation, that God has revealed himself, not fully, but in part, through nature. And then we have the Bible, where it's a special revelation. And in fact, you know what's interesting? There's a perception that science and the Bible are a conflict. Historically, do you know where science was usually taught? up until like the last 150 years. It was taught in the seminaries. It was taught to pastors. They were the scientists. Because you studied that as a way to understand God's revelation of himself. And so many of the oldest scientists were, you know, were strong believers in God. See, biblical faith that God calls us to is consistent with science, consistent with reason. You know what? We should understand that about faith in general. Let me even try to illustrate it, okay? You've been wondering here, I've got two chairs up here. You're wondering what in the world these are. All right, I've got two chairs. One I pulled out of the prayer room, one I built myself. Now, I know a bunch of you are going to come and ask me afterwards, which one was the one that you built? You know, because you probably can't tell, right? And so just to say, this was the one that I built, all right? People have questioned whether I have mechanical ability and all. I built this myself. I can build things, and I used, you know, great cardboard, duct tape. Any man knows that duct tape can build anything, so it's kind of like, okay, we got that. And, you know, a nice piece of plywood here. Now, let's say you come up here, and I say, have a seat. All right, which chair are you going to sit in? Now, if you think about it, sitting in a chair is an act of faith. It's an act saying, I look at something and I'm making a leap of faith and saying, this is going to hold my weight. It's going to be safe for me to do that. It's an act of faith. But if I say, okay, sit down on this, do you have equal faith in both chairs? Probably not. What if I tell, hey, I built this. I tell you it's safe. Is your pastor going to hurt you? Come on, have a seat. Come on, young. Trust me. Come on. Now, why are you not going to sit in this chair? I joked about I wasn't going to sit in the first service because I need it for the second service. Now I don't want to sit in it because I don't want to hurt myself. But why do you sit in this chair?
Oh.
Because faith always includes reason. So you look at this and you say, just by reason, I observe this and I'm thinking, man, duct tape and bricks and they're already falling apart and a little plywood. And my reason, my logic tells me that this is not a safe place to put my faith. Whereas this one, I look at that and I say, okay, we've got strong wood. It looks like it's well built. I've seen other people sit in this chair. My logic and reason tells me this is a safe place to put my faith. Now, what you need to realize, faith without reason is foolish. It would be foolish for me to say, oh, just believe it. And it would be foolish for you to look at this and just to ignore the facts and to sit in this chair when everything is telling you it's going to fall apart. That would be foolish. And in the same way, faith in any religious statement without reason that goes against logic and reason, that would be foolish to do. No, the fact is God calls us to have a faith that is consistent with reason. But at the other point, he also calls us to have faith. So can you say, well, I don't have any faith. For me, it's just reason. Oh, really? Well, if you did that, you would never sit in any chair. You're going to look at this chair and say, how do I know it's going to hold me? I've got to do 15 minutes of testing before I'm going to put my faith in it. And that's unwieldy. The fact of the matter is, you know, you sat in a chair today, that was a statement of faith. And everyone works faith into their life, from sitting in chairs to getting in a plane to any statement of belief. And so we've got to look at that and we've got to say, what is the reasonableness of our faith? And here's what I want you to realize. When we talk about this issue, and we talk about creation and evolution, the evolutionary scientists have faith. And they have a faith based on reason. It's not a controversy between faith and reason. It's a question of two people who have faith, two groups that have faith, and both have reasons behind their faith. It's not a conflict between faith and reason. It's everyone, and it's looking at the reasons. Are they more reasonable? Are you putting faith in a chair that's made of duct tape and plywood? Are you putting your faith in something that's well built and you have every reason to put your faith in? Now, here's what I believe we're going to find is in the next couple weeks. We're going to look at this, and I'm going to start with the assumption. I'm not going to start even with the assumption there is a God. I'm going to start with the assumption that there could be a God or there could not be a God, and then let's look at the evidence and see which one the evidence lines up with more. All right? And what I think we're going to find is that I think we're going to find this is the evolutionary claim. I mean, they build something, but it's duct tape, and it's falling apart, and every time it falls apart, they try to tape it back together again. And some things have no evidence, starting with the assumption that there cannot be a God, that all we have is materialism. There's no evidence for that. And you're it's a self-refuting claim, saying the only thing we can know is what we can prove, but I can't prove that. And then you have a bunch of things that go beyond evidence, that go beyond, against the logic. Again, as we mentioned, the Big Bang Theory, the idea that there was nothing, and suddenly out of nothing, boom, nothing created everything, and suddenly everything that exists came from nothing. And we know by observation that nothing ever creates something. But if you believe in evolution, you got to put the duct tape on it, you got to say, well, this is what I believe, even though the evidence goes against it. And what I think we're going to see, what I found, and what I think that you're going to find as well, is that both are positions of faith, but the evidence is far more consistent with the story of creation and the story of evolution. Boy, we've got a lot of duct tape and a lot of plywood and a lot of things that are falling apart. There's a guy, it's a good book. I'll recommend several books beyond it, but I love this one just for the title. It's Frank Turrett and Norman Geisler. He said, I don't have enough faith to be an atheist. And they talk about this and other issues. And they're basically saying, it requires faith. And I don't have that much faith. Because this faith of evolution, you're going so much against science, you're going so much against the evidence, you're making such huge leaps of faith, then I don't have that much faith. It is a statement of faith, and I believe it's a statement of faith that it's unreasonable, that is against science, is against the evidence, whereas there's a statement of faith that says, I believe that there can be a God, and once I believe that, everything else seems to fall into place. But ultimately, there is also a place of faith. And there is a step of faith that we each need to take. Now, it's a step that goes, it's not against reason, it's with reason, but it goes beyond reason. There might be times to say, can I prove to you that there's a God? I can't prove to you, I can't prove anything to you. You know, what I can do is that I can prove that this is the most consistent with logic and reason. And at the end of the day, it's like, okay, what are you going to put your faith in? And God goes beyond logic, he goes beyond reason, but he's consistent with that. But not only that, it's a statement of the heart. See, faith is not just intellectual belief. Well, I believe this. I mean, how many of us believe we should eat healthier? You know, we believe what we're eating, we would be happier, healthier if we ate healthier. But why don't you do it? Because you don't really believe it. You know it, but if you really believed it, you would do it. See, it's one thing to know. It's another thing to really have faith. If I have faith in something, I act on it. And so as I have faith in Jesus Christ, it's not only knowing, it's acting, it's putting my faith and trust and becoming a follower of him. And you know why a lot of people struggle with this? I think that in my experience, a lot of people struggle not because the evidence draws them away from God, but because they don't want there to be a God. They look at it, they believe what they want, and they don't want there to be a God. They don't. In fact, we'll see some quotes from some evolutionists that are saying this exact thing. That they can't allow God in the door. They don't want that. And the intellectual arguments are oftentimes really more excuses to say, I don't want there to be a God. I want to choose a lifestyle that rejects God. And so this gives me an excuse to be able to do that. And I want to tell you, there might be some that this is a relevant question, but I've asked this to many, many people over the years where, well, they'll argue one thing after another. And I'll answer that. And then they'll, here's another problem. Here's another problem. And I'll come to them and I'll say, if I could prove to you beyond a reasonable doubt that God exists, if I could prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the world is created, if I could prove beyond a reasonable doubt that Jesus rose again, would you believe in him? And you know, often I get responses, oh, but you can't prove it, you can't. No, if I could. Because you've got to look at it and say, are you really rejecting him for intellectual reasons, or are you using the intellectual reasons as an excuse because you don't want to submit your heart? When I think about what John says in John chapter 3, this is the judgment. The light has come into the world, and people love the darkness rather than the light because their works were evil. For everyone who does wicked things hates the light and does not come into the light lest his works be exposed. And that's what a lot of people are at. God's the light, and he comes and he brings truth. And people said, but I hate the light. I don't want the light because I don't want to be exposed. I don't want to have to submit to God. But what does John say? But whoever does what is true comes into the light so that it might be clearly seen that his works might be carried out in God. And there is a difficulty of coming before God. There's a humility of doing that. But you know, here's what I want to tell you. The light always reveals the truth. And one of the things it reveals about who we really are and what we're created for and living in the relationship with God that we're created for. And is it hard to submit to him? Yes, it is. But I want to tell you, once we learn to live under the light, there is a point of humility, of surrender. But there's an incredible blessing of realizing that the light is living the life that we were created for. For some here, you might be here and you might be like, man, I'm not really sure, I'm a skeptic, and please come the next couple weeks. You might have friends that are skeptics, bring them for the next couple weeks. I would love to even spend time and talking with people and exploring and answering. We're gonna have time to answer questions, and please come and be open and honest. There might be some of us that are here and we're struggling with this issue. I hope as Christians, this is an affirmation of you. It gives you a love of nature and say, hey, we have more confidence to read the reason to believe what we believe, that we realize that what's taught in Genesis is true. And it will give us more excitement and love about God's truth and his word and about nature as well. There might be some that it's not just an intellectual discussion. But I would ask you this question. If I could prove to you beyond a reasonable doubt that God is true, would you believe? And if you're looking at that and you're having a hard time answering that question, maybe your problem isn't your doubts. Maybe your problem is that you just don't want to surrender to Christ. And you're using the intellectual doubts as an excuse to be able to reject him. At least be honest with yourself. Be honest with yourself, admit that the issue, and if you say, I'm going to reject him for this reason. Even in that, give God room to work. And maybe you're going to choose, okay, I'm going to go look at the truth. Well, then come look at the truth and let's see where it guides us. I look forward to this. I really look forward to the next month. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to look at a lot of God's creation. We're going to see God revealing from the smallest simple cell up to the biggest in the universe. And we're going to be amazed by the majesty of God.
If you have a question about the message, Community Church, or Jesus Christ, send us a text to 330-400-3242. You can learn more about our events and community groups at ccpl.life/connect. There you can also send in a prayer request. We would love to pray for you. Have a blessed Lord's Day, and we'll see you on Sunday.